This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. We're going to start off this week with the Avenger. We'll hear his story from October 26th, 1945, titled The Cradle of Doom. After that, it's the Columbia Workshop and Never Come Monday, their story from April 23rd, 1938.
The Avenger.
The road to crime ends in a trap that justice sets. Crime does not pay.
Avenger, sworn enemy of evil, is actually Jim Brandon, a famous biochemist. Through his numerous scientific experiments, Brandon has perfected several inventions to aid him in his crusade against crime as the Avenger. Most remarkable of these inventions is the highly secret diffusion capsule, which cloaks him in the black light of invisibility. Brandon's assistant, the beautiful Fern Collier, is the only one who shares his secrets and knows that he is the man the underworld fears as the Avenger. And now, The Avenger and the Cradle of Doom.
Jim, there's a Miss Edith Wiley here to see you.
Who? Well, you didn't make any appointments for me this morning, did you, Fern?
No, but this girl...
Oh, I'm sorry, but we've got to finish these chemical tests today. If it's important, ask her to come back tomorrow at 11.
Mr. Brandon, excuse me for intruding like this, but you've got to see now. It's really very important.
Miss Wiley, really
listen to me for 5 minutes, Mr. Brandon, and then I'll go if you want me to.
Oh, all right, Miss Wiley, sit down and tell me what's on your mind.
Thank you. I've come about my fiancé, John Martin. He's been framed by his brother, Tobias, and is being held incommunicado at White Ridge.
White Ridge? Where's that?
It's a small private sanitarium about 3 miles from here on Larkspur Road.
Oh, I see. You'd better take this down in your book, Fern.
Right, Jim.
Now, Miss Wiley, you're telling me your fiancé has been committed to White Ridge by his brother?
Yes. John's perfectly sane, Mr. Brandon. But Tobias wants to collect his share of the Martin estate. And this is the method he's using to do it.
That's a very serious charge. Anyone found guilty of such a crime faces a penalty for kidnapping and extortion.
I know. Believe me, I wouldn't be making these accusations if I weren't sure.
Exactly what does Tobias Martin stand to gain by this?
Several million dollars worth of John's holdings. You see, when John's father died about a year ago, he willed an equal share of stock in the Martin Steel Mills to each of his two sons. This stock cannot be sold, but if either of the sons dies or is declared incompetent, the entire holdings pass into the hands of the other brother.
Mm-hmm. How long has John been at White Ridge?
Almost 2 weeks.
Why didn't you report it to the police immediately?
Because I hoped the whole thing would be settled quietly. I thought I could get John out of White Ridge and placed in my custody. And when that failed, I tried to reach Tobias, reason with him.
You haven't seen Tobias then?
No. I went to his home several times, but his secretary told me he was ill. Wouldn't even let me in the house.
Who's in charge of White Ridge Sanitarium?
A man by the name of Dr. Marcus Falco and his wife.
Have they many patients?
Only a few, I think. From what I can gather, The doctor limits his service to the very rich. Mr. Brandon, can you help me? Can you get John out of White Ridge?
Well, I'll certainly look into the matter, Miss Wiley. Where can I get in touch with you?
I've taken a little cottage just west of White Ridge to be near John. 1215 Larkspur Road. The telephone is Larkspur 9000.
Thank you. I'll call you the moment I have anything to report.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Brandon.
Well, never mind that, Miss Wiley, and don't worry. If John Martin is sane, be released, and the law will take care of everything else. That must be White Ridge, just ahead there, Fern. That big house on the hill surrounded by poplars.
Oh, gosh, it's lovely. Certainly doesn't look like a sanitarium, does it?
Oh, not from down anyway. Oh, here's the driveway.
Jim, considering the close watch the Medical Society keeps on private sanitariums, how could it be possible for a sane person to be committed to one of them?
Well, an unscrupulous person might manage it somehow, but his chances of getting away with it would be mighty slim.
Of course, there is a possibility that John Martin isn't sane. Edith Wiley could be prejudiced about that.
Well, that's the reason I want to see and talk with John before I get involved in this. Oh, here we are. You'd better wait here in the car, Fern.
All right.
What is it, please?
My name's Brandon. I've come to see John Martin.
I'm sorry. Visitors are not allowed. Except on Sunday.
Oh, this is urgent. I'd like to speak to Dr. Falco, please.
The doctor's busy. I'm Mrs. Falco. As I said, you may visit Mr. Martin on Sunday. Nova...
What is it, Joanna? Who's at the door?
Mr. Brandon, to see John Martin, Marcus.
Dr. Falco?
Yes?
Well, this is a matter of extreme importance, Doctor. I must see John Martin at once.
Are you a relative?
Well, as a matter of fact, no, I'm
then
not...
Then a visit is out of the question. We observe rigid rules here, Mr. Brandon. Complete rest and quiet has been prescribed for Mr. Martin.
I suppose Tobias Martin's permission is required in order to see John.
That is correct, except for the regular visiting hour on Sunday.
I understand. Good day.
Good day.
Marcus, what is all this interest in John Martin? That Miss Wiley, but now this man...
Leave John Martin and his visitors to me, Joanna. I know what is best.
That's what you said when you brought him here. But I'm not so sure it's true. I wonder if his brother weren't so rich.
John Martin is in my care. Now let me deal with him in my own way. Go to the kitchen now. Our patients will be wanting their lunch.
Not very hospitable, are they, Jim?
Oh, that place is fortified with regulations, Fern.
Well, what do we do now? Call on Tobias?
Not yet. Let's drive down the road to Miss Wiley's place. I want to ask her a few more questions.
Jim, do you suppose that Dr. Falco could be a phony?
Well, no, Fern, not in the usual sense, anyway. He's a licensed physician, took his degree in Vienna 30 years ago.
Oh, you looked him up before we got here.
Certainly. He's been specializing in psychiatric cases and unusual nerve disorders for the past 10 years.
There's always the chance, though, that he may have turned unscrupulous. In John Martin's case, there's a lot of money at stake.
Now, Fern, don't jump the hurdles before we come to them.
There's Miss Wiley's cottage, Jim. 1215, that was the number. Oh, there she is in the garden. Hello, Miss Wiley.
Oh, hello. I wasn't expecting to see you so soon. Won't you come in?
Why, no, we haven't time. We've just come from White Ridge.
Did you see John? How is he, Mr. Brandon?
Oh, I don't know. They wouldn't even let me inside the place.
But you're connected with the police. You could have forced them to let you see him.
Yes, but I understood you wanted this matter handled quietly.
Oh, I do.
Then I suppose I'll have to wait until Sunday to see him.
You know, there is one way you could talk with John without their knowing it.
Oh, what's that?
Well, the patient's rooms are all on the second floor in the back of the house. John's room is the one right next to the fire escape. After dark, you could climb up there and talk with him through the bars without anyone knowing it.
That sounds like a good idea, Jim.
Yes. I think I'll do that very thing tonight. Thanks, Miss Wiley.
And that's the whole story, Mr. Brandon. When every other method to get control of my money failed, Tobias framed me into this place. You see, while I'm in here, he has complete control of the Martin Steel Mills and he's able to collect the dividends on all my holdings.
You think Tobias and Dr. Falco are in this thing together, then?
Well, what else can I think? Dr. Falco examined me and declared me mentally incompetent. You can judge for yourself whether that's true.
Well, John, my opinion is all in your favor, but I'm not a doctor, and a layman's judgment in a case of this kind doesn't amount to anything. Only a physician's verdict would stand up in court.
Well, then go to Dr. Stanley Myers. He's been my doctor since childhood. Less than a month ago, he gave me a complete going over and told me I was in perfect condition. He has a complete case history on me from the time I was six.
That's exactly what we need. I'll go to see Myers first thing in the morning.
You think I'll be out of here by tomorrow, then?
No, it may take a few days to straighten out the technicalities. You see, I want to make certain your exit from here is strictly legal. Otherwise, we might run into trouble when we bring charges against your brother.
All right. I'll try to be patient, but work as fast as you can, will you, Brandon? This place is worse than a prison. Sometimes I think this Dr. Falco is really trying to drive me mad.
All right, Dr. Falco, now that you know the police are interested in John Martin's case, maybe you'll give us some straight answers.
Oh, of course, Inspector. When Mr. Brandon came here yesterday, he did not
tell... All right, go ahead, Jim. Let's get to the bottom of this.
Dr. Falco, when you examined John Martin 2 weeks ago, just what did you find wrong with him?
Well, to put it as simply as I can, his symptoms indicate that he is suffering from acute mania, and he has constant hallucinations that border on delusional insanity.
In other words, you pronounced him dangerously insane and recommended his commitment here at White Ridge for treatment.
Yes. I am sure that any reputable psychiatrist would agree with me in regard to John Martin's symptoms.
Then you won't mind if we take a look at your records, Doctor.
My records, Mr. Brandon?
Yes. Also, the commitment papers bearing the signature of Tobias Martin.
Oh, of course. Naturally, everything was handled in the proper manner. You will not find any irregularities here at White Ridge.
The papers, please.
Well, they're in a safe in the adjoining room. I'll get them.
Well, Inspector, what do you think?
It's pretty hard to say offhand, Jim. We know Dr. Myers is on the level, and he's willing to swear there's nothing wrong with John Martin, but this Dr. Falco is something else again. He's a smooth operator, all right. We're going to have our troubles pinning anything on him, even if he is mixed up in this.
If Tobias Martin brought Dr. Falco out, we'll find some way to prove it, Inspector.
Yeah. Hey, this is some layout he's got to accommodate 3 or 4 patients.
Here are the papers.
Well, thank you. Oh, here's the one we're after, Inspector.
Oh, yes. It's signed by Tobias Martin, all right?
Uh-huh. How many times have you seen Tobias Martin, Dr. Falco?
Oh, only twice. First, when he brought John here to be examined, and then again when he committed him.
Take charge of these papers, Inspector. Tobias Martin has a little explaining to do.
But I tell you, Mr. Martin is...
Oh, he can't see anyone.
No, who are you?
Well, I'm Charles Burton, confidential secretary to Tobias Martin.
Mr. Burton, we're the police. Step aside, we're coming in.
Police? Oh, why didn't you say so?
Where is Martin?
Well, the room at the top of the stairs. I'll tell him you're coming.
We'll be right behind you. Come on, Jim.
It looks like Tobias intends to give us the runaround, Inspector.
Sick and bad. You think he'd cook a better dodge than that? Well, have you announced this, Burton?
Mr. Martin will see you.
I'll say he will.
In here, please.
Tobias Martin?
Yes? What is all this?
Well, I'm Inspector White. This is Jim Brandon. We're here about your brother.
John, what's he up to now?
Well, at the moment, he's rather anxious to be released from Dr. Falco's sanitarium.
Oh, so that's where he is.
Look, Mr. Martin, let's not waste time. You know where your brother is and how he got there, and you probably know what the penalty is for falsely committing a person to an institution of that kind.
What are you talking about?
This. John Martin's commitment paper is signed by you.
Preposterous. I never signed this paper.
You deny that's your signature?
Well, no, I can't very well deny that. It's my writing, all right. But to the best of my knowledge, I never laid eyes on this document before.
Now, what about you, Burton? Do you deny all knowledge of this, too?
Well, I certainly do. That signature must have been forged.
There's one way to prove whether you signed that paper or not, Martin.
How?
The signature was witnessed by Dr. Falco. It's just a matter of bringing you two face to face.
But Mr. Martin is too ill to leave his bed. The doctor left him in my care, and I can't take the...
Then we'll bring Dr. Falco here. We'll soon find out who's lying.
Thank you.
to the Avenger and the Cradle of Doom.
You and your secret experiments. You see where they've landed us, under the surveillance of the police.
Will you keep quiet, Joanna? My experiments have nothing to do with it. The police are merely checking on John Martin.
That's what you say, Marcus. But how do I know? For years, you've kept your experiments a secret from me. That room in the tower that is always locked. And what of that big motor in the basement? What are they used for?
I have told you. Just part of my experiment. A wonderful experiment that may be the salvation of all the mental unfortunates in the world.
I do not believe you, Marcus. I think that you have bartered science for gain. Either that, or you yourself are mad.
Joanna.
Hear me out, Marcus. All these years I've labored at your side for what I believe to be a great and humane cause. My faith in you was quite complete, but it was also blind, and you have failed me in it.
No, no, I haven't.
I'm warning you. I will not stand beside you now to face I do not know what
expectation. Joanna, stop. And listen to me for a moment. I have nothing to hide from you or anyone else. It is only that my experiment is in its infancy. And I wish to keep it a secret until its worth was proved. Come to the tower room with me. I will show you. The mind becomes unbalanced. It can no longer cope with the problems and the complexities of life. Therefore, to heal it, one must work backward. Smooth away the burdens. Lighten all the pressures that experience has inflicted. Let the mind revert to the tranquility and to the peace it knew in babyhood. Then it must be built up again from there. Stronger, firmer, more assured.
But how can that be done, Marcus? What part did this tower room have in that experiment?
Look about you, Joanna. This would seem to be an ordinary room. It is furnished so that it would look that way. But it is not. This room is a large-sized cradle where my tired patients were rocked into a state of complete relaxation.
A cradle?
Yes. This entire room is suspended from that ridge pole in the roof. A huge belt line is hooked to that and runs down through that chimney to the motor in the basement. When the motor is turned on, the patient can be rocked without his being conscious of it. And that swaying movement of everything about him produces the same soothing effect as rocking an infant in a cradle.
But what are the furniture?
It is all clamped to the floor. Come, I will show you. Here, this heavy bureau.
Why, Marcus, those clamps have been broken.
What? Yes. Help me examine the other furniture, Joanna.
Marcus, someone has closed the door and locked it.
That cannot be. The patients are all locked in the rooms. It's locked, all right.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I can't understand this. Who would want to lock us up in here?
I'm afraid, Marcus. What if someone turns the motor on? This heavy furniture would mangle us.
Joanna,
oh.
The cradle. The cradle is rocking. Oh. Someone has turned the motor on full force. Be careful, the bureau.
Marcus, I'm dizzy. Oh.
Joanna, Marcus. Help! Help!
Jim, this place seems to be deserted. Where do you suppose the Falcos are?
I don't know, Fern. But one of them must be around somewhere. Dr. Falco? Dr. Falco? Come on, Fern. I don't like the looks of this. We'd better see if John Martin's all right.
Maybe Tobias got word to Dr. Falco and warned him to leave. That way, Tobias couldn't be identified as the one who signed the paper.
Well, we've got Tobias where we want him anyway.
You left the inspector guarding his house, didn't you?
Yes, he can't get away. Ah, this is John's room. John! John! Are you all right?
Yes, I'm okay. What's the matter?
This is Brandon. John, have you any idea where the doctor kept his keys?
Well, no. In his pocket, most likely.
Did Mrs. Falco have a set?
I suppose so. She delivered all our meals.
Run down to the kitchen, friend. She probably kept them there. If not, look in the library.
Right.
John, the Falcos seem to have fled.
Fled? Well, that's strange. Up until 5 minutes ago, I heard Sarah voices coming to the tower.
The tower? I'll have a look up there as soon as I get you out of here.
Here, Jim, I found this set of keys in the kitchen.
Good. Let's see. 201. This is the one for John's room. All right, John, come on out.
Well, what in the world's going on here, Mr. Brandon?
We don't know yet, John. I think the best thing for you to do is to get out of here. Go down to Edith's place.
What do you say, Mr. Brandon? I'll wait at Edith's for you.
Right. Now, Fern, our first stop is the tower, up these stairs.
I can't understand how Tobias and Dr. Falco ever expected to get away with a thing like this, Jim.
Everything is beginning to add up a little too neatly. Ah, here's a door. Let's try this.
And the key's on the outside.
But the door isn't locked.
Jim, it's Dr. Falco and his wife.
Don't come inside, Fern. I'll see what's happened here. The whole place is a shambles.
Shall I call headquarters, Jim?
No, not yet. I'd like to investigate this place first. Well, the doctor and his wife are dead, all right. Battered to death by this furniture.
Jim, look. That whole room leads to one side.
Yes, and there are clamps on the floor where the furniture belonged. Why, this whole room is suspended from that ridge pole. Come on, Fern.
Jim, now that you've discovered that motor in the basement, and you know how the Falcos were killed, why do you want to examine the rest of the house?
To find out if any of the patients could have left their rooms.
But they couldn't have. All their rooms have special locks that can only be locked and unlocked from the outside. It must have been suicide, Jim.
Well, as soon as we finished here in John's room, we'll report this.
Doesn't seem to be anything unusual here.
No, it's exactly like all the others.
Jim, it stands to reason that if the Falcos had been murdered, the tower room would have been locked from the outside. That door wasn't locked. They could have gotten out if they'd wanted to.
Yes, unless the murderer unlocked the door after they were dead.
Jim, what was that you just picked up?
It was a small piece of cellulose tape. It was sticking to the floor here by the door.
Oh, I thought it might be a clue.
It is. Fern, drive into town and call the inspector. Tell him to bring a squad of men out to 1215 Larkspur Road.
What for, Jim?
The Avenger will deliver a murderer to them there.
I told you not to worry, Edith. Everything worked out exactly as we planned it. Tobias's goose is cooked.
Now, let me get things straight, John. In order to make the Falco's death look like suicide, you went back after they were dead, unlocked the tower door, and left the key on the outside?
That's right.
That motor in the basement could be set to stop automatically, couldn't it?
Yes. When I turned it on, I set the automatic stop for 15 minutes. I knew it would take Brandon longer than that to drive to White Ridge from Tobias's place.
The theory the police were going to work on is that when the Falcos realized their complicity with Tobias was known to the police, they took the easiest way out.
Right. That leaves Tobias holding the bag with a signature to explain and a suicide that the police will explain for him.
And you and I in complete control of the Martin Millions. Wonderful, John. Except for one thing.
You mean Burton?
Yeah. He's strung along with us all the way so far. But when you're in control of the money, what's to prevent him from trying to blackmail us?
How can he? We've got too much on him. He not only impersonated Tobias in making all the arrangements with Dr. Falco, but he managed to get Tobias's signature on the committal papers by placing it among a stack of form letters. He could get a stiff sentence for that.
I suppose you're right. John, did you hear a strange noise just now?
Yes. Seemed to come from that hall door. There's no one there.
There is someone here, John Martin.
Oh, who is it, John? I can't see anyone.
You can't see the Avenger, Edith Wiley.
The Avenger?
Yes. I came to inform you of a forgotten clue, but you have obliged me with a complete confession.
A clue? What clue?
A little strip of cellulose tape. But I think a jury will find it quite big enough to hang you.
Edith, quick, get the car. We've got to get out of here.
It's much too late for flight, John. The police have an appointment with you here. And those sirens should tell you that they have arrived to keep it.
Thank you.
return, did you send those notes of Dr. Falco's to the Medic Society?
Yes. Jim, do you think his theories may prove valuable in the treatment of mental cases?
I'm afraid not, Vern. About the greatest tribute we can pay the old gentleman is to say that he was sincere and idealistic, and that his treatments didn't do his patients any harm.
Jim, am I right in believing this case almost had you crying, Uncle?
Well, now that John, Edith, and Burton are safely in jail, I think I can risk admitting them.
It was that cellulose tape that tipped you off to the whole thing, wasn't it?
Yes, up until then, the case against Tobias was practically airtight and ingeniously clever. Edith's coming here pleading for help. John, obviously sane in the asylum. Tobias's signature on the papers, his denial of writing it. And finally, what looked like the suicide of the doctor and his wife.
Yes, but just what did that little piece of tape mean?
It meant that John Morton had figured out a way to keep the doctor from locking his door whenever it suited his purpose to do so.
But how? John was locked inside his room when we got there.
Of course. It was part of his plan to be found locked inside then. But when he wanted the door to remain unlocked, he stretched the cellulose tape across the part of the door frame that the lock fitted into. It wasn't noticeable, and it prevented the lock from catching. When the doctor tried the door, John stood tight against it and held it, and the doctor thought it was locked.
Then all John had to do when he wanted the lock to catch was remove the tape.
Right, Vern.
But how did John know exactly when to kill Dr. Falco?
Burton called Edith and told her I was on my way to bring the doctor to identify Tobias. She went to White Ridge and warned John from the fire escape.
And John pretended he was insane when Burton, impersonating Tobias, took him to Dr. Falco to be examined.
Yes. Even the best psychiatrist can sometimes be fooled by a clever patient.
Well, that makes it all clear. Oh, Jim, before you go, will you send that stack of mail? And you'd better form the habit of reading all your letters before you sign them.
All characters, names, places, and plots used in the Avenger program are fictitious. Any similarity, persons living or dead, is purely coincidental.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of
The Avenger.
The Columbia Workshop, under the direction of William N. Robeson. Tonight, the Columbia Workshop presents Sir Cedric Hardwick, Eleanor Picard, Lady Hardwick in private life, and Woodford Kane in Never Come Monday, a comedy of Yorkshiremen by Eric Knight, which appeared in the recent issue of Esquire. This English story, written by an Englishman, adapted for radio by another Englishman, Stephen Fox, played by an all-English cast, but presented in American radio technique, will be followed next week by an English play to be presented in typical British radio technique, about which more will be said in half an hour. Sir Cedric Hardwick, who is now appearing in Shadow and Substance at the Golden Theater in New York, will be heard in tonight's broadcast as Kappa Wambly, Eleanor Picard, Lady Hardwick, as Mary, his wife, and Whitfoot Kane, who plays the role of a shoemaker in The Shoemaker's Holiday at New York's Mercury Theater, plays the role of Sam Small. The Columbia Workshop presents Never Come Monday.
Kappa! Kappa! Kappa Wambly!
Aye, aye.
Up, I'd guess, man.
No, but I will be
back. Come and have that tea, man. It's 4:30 in the morning.
Mary? There's somewhat wrong.
Aye, but there'll be somewhat worse wrong if I don't stir this stumps and whack John Willie Braithwaite so as he can get steam up at mill.
Now, hark to me, Mary. When I went out to see how the weather was, I felt somewhat strange about day.
Aye? What was wrong with it?
Mary, I believe today's still Sunday.
But how can that be? Yesterday was Sunday.
Ah, you're right. Don't seem reasonable and proper that we should have two Sundays in a row, but...
By God, this is a champion do it, is and all. No doubt something should be done about it.
Ah, but what? Mary, I have it. Now, the thing to do to prove it is to decide what's the difference between a Sunday morning and a weekday morning.
Ah, well, that's easily done. On a weekday morning, that takes their knocker and that goes about the village of Allaby Brig and waking folks up to go to work at mill. And on Sunday morning, that don't waken them up.
Hey, there I have it. And if I don't waken the village this morning, it is a Sunday morning.
Aye, nothing could be fairer than that.
Ah, that's it, all right. Because I'm not wakening anybody up, it must be a Sunday morning. And because it's a Sunday morning, I mustn't waken anybody up. So no matter which way a lad looks at it, answers it, comes out, it's Sunday.
Aye, but, Capper, some of the people may wake up of their own accord. And if they don't know that it's the second Sunday in a row, they may go walking down to the mill.
Ah, there's reason in that, Mary.
Heaven knows, they've got to get up early enough. And it's a terrible shame not to let them have this extra piece of rest that's come by a miracle light.
Ah, Mary, but what's to do?
Why don't they go down and waken them up and tell them it's still Sunday? Then they can go back to sleep again.
Eh, Mary, it's a grand thing for a man with an important job like mine to have a wife like you. Eh, I'll take my knocker and go at once and whacken the village and tell them good news. John Willie Braithwaite, our good lad.
I'm whacking. What time is it?
Well, thou needn't fret yourself about time, John Willie. I just whackened thee up to tell thee it's another Sunday morning so they can go back to their bed and sleep in peace. There's no need of your blowing the mill whistle this morning. Ah, that was good. Hey, I didn't disturb him at all. He wasn't more than half awake. Abby Welsh, Abby Welsh, our cook, Abby Welsh.
Ah,
Capper,
hold on, I'm up.
Well, thou needn't be. It's Sunday morning again. Get back to the rest.
How just means it's Sunday again?
Eh, I've no time to talk. I must be on my rounds.
Capper, come back here. Capper!
Liz Barrett! Liz Barrett! Ah, they work too hard less. But today is Sunday again, so they can go back to their bed and have an extra hour or two.
Sunday again?
I'm sorry, lass, but I've no time. I must keep on.
Here he comes now.
Hey, come here, Capper.
Hey, come here, lad.
What's all fuss about?
Ah, lad. What's the idea of telling us that this is another Sunday?
Aye, aye, Capper.
Well, it is.
Honest, I know it is.
Well, I can't explain it, but I'm full sure something very wonderful has happened. And it is Sunday.
Now, look here, Capper. I don't admit that it does seem Sunday-ish like, but are we to be sure?
Eh, well, now. Ah, now, here's the way us can tell. Now, if this be a weekday, the mill whistle will blow the quarter of hour before working time.
Right, that's right.
And if this be Sunday, like I say, the mill whistle won't blow the quarter hour, will it?
Well, it seems like I'll be right.
To be sure he's right.
Aye, the mill whistle has never missed in 20 years that I know, John.
Aye, Capper has an edge on him.
Now, look here, lad. I know's my watch, don't they?
Aye, and it's a good one, too.
Ah, the best old village in Allaby Rig.
Well, gather ye around and look at it.
Hold on now.
That's enough. You can't all see it. Can I see it, Gollicker?
Aye, I can, Copper.
Well, now, what does it say?
It lacks 20 seconds to the quarter hour.
Now, Gollicker, that can call out the seconds, and if the whistle doesn't blow, it must be Sunday.
Hold your gap. 2 seconds, 8 seconds is gone. Now, 10 seconds. 13. 18, 20, it's the quarter hour.
Did anybody hear twistle?
No, I didn't hear it.
Then it is Sunday.
Ah, come, that's right, Capper.
Of course, you can all stay home and get away and get another hour's sleep.
I'll be
on my way.
Hey, it is, Capper. I hear that they've discovered this is another Sunday.
Ah, that's so.
Well, isn't having two Sundays in a row just a very little bit irregular, as I might say?
Eh, it is that, lad. But thou must remember us is living in very unusual times.
Ah, we are that. And I'm glad they discovered it in time, for if I hadn't, I would have gone and rung school bell like great lummox, thinking it were Monday. But now I know it's Sunday, I must go and ring church bell.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right, lad.
But, Capper, just to think that the mill workers who live outside Allaby Brig know it's Sunday. They may be at mill gates waiting to go to work, thinking it's Monday.
Lad, that's right. I'll go to mill and tell them.
Hey, Capper, and I'll go ring church bell. Thank you, Capper.
Yeah, that's all right, lad. Hey, lad, what you doing there? Why aren't you home in your bed?
In our beds? We've come to work.
Oh, I will come to work.
But there's no work today.
Hast mill closed up?
No, today's Sunday.
Sunday? Well, if it's Sunday in Allaby Brig, what day is it in Wuxley Green, where I come from?
Hey, and I'll run back my place.
And then Tannery. Yes.
Well, happen it's Sunday there too, and you didn't notice it. When a couple of Sundays come in a row, you could hardly blame a chap for mistaking the second one for Monday. So I advise you to go back home and enjoy Sunday.
Now, look here, look here. What's going on? What's the idea you ain't all in the mill?
Well, because his second Sunday has arrived, Mr. Blocks.
Nonsense. When I left home, it was a Monday. How can it be Sunday year when it was Monday at my home in Fettersley?
I don't right know, Mr. Bloggs, unless it happens to be Sunday in Puttersley too, and I didn't notice it.
It's Monday, I tell you. Now, come on into work. How can it be two Sundays in a row?
Listen. There go church bells.
That proves it's Sunday.
I'll be sent to work on Sunday.
Aye, and I'm going home to dress for church.
Why are you playing the organ?
Because it's Sunday.
Sunday? But yesterday was Sunday.
I know, Mr. Stoninghorn, but I was on my way to the schoolhouse when I heard the church bell. When I got here, all the people were in the church, so it must be Sunday.
That's right. It must be.
The people are waiting for you to preach the sermon.
But wait a minute, Mr. Sims. If this is Sunday, this is the fourth or the fifth Sunday before Epiphany.
I couldn't tell you that, Mr. Stoninghorn.
Well, Mr. Sims, there's only one thing to do. I'll give the same service and preach the same sermon as I did yesterday.
I should think that would be right and proper.
A grand sermon, Mr. Stoninghorn preached.
Hey, I liked it right a lot nicer hearing it for second time.
So did I. Today you could see just where it was going in a manner of speaking.
Hey. Oh, look here, lad. Here comes Mr. Flo.
Oh, look here. No use pretending any longer. Today's Monday.
But, Mr. Vlogs, how can it be Monday? We're just coming out of church.
But I got proof. I telephoned the Greenwich Observatory and they told me that today's Monday.
Well, it may be Monday in Greenwich, but we know that it's Sunday here in Allaby Brig.
All the stupid, blundering, idiotic people of
this. Mr. Boggs, the Sabbath cannot be profaned with quarrelling.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Stoninghorn, but hear me, sir. Today may be Sunday, but you have to admit that it's a bit unusual to have two Sundays in a row.
Yes, there is something in what you say, Mr. Bloggs.
Ah, crees we, Mr. Bloggs. I know it's Monday, because I run public house. And I had to close up early yesterday because it was Sunday.
He wanted to be Monday, so he won't have to shut up his public house early tonight.
Hey, let me put in my heifer.
What is it, really, Helliger?
There's man here whose opinion we all set great store by. He has a brain, he has. He invented something and made a lot of money out of it. And he's a great traveler. Not only has he been to London, but to foreign lands as well on a cruise. If there's any man who knows what day it is, it's Sam Small.
Come on, Sam, here I am.
Well, lads, it's this way. A day's a day, and then again it isn't, in a manner of speaking. The time I went round twirled, one day it was Tuesday, and the next morning the captain said it was Thursday. And so it were, because I've never yet found that lost day. And on the other hand, a lad aboard ship told me, if we'd gone round the world t'other way, we should have had two Tuesdays. Now, if you can have two Tuesdays when we're going round t'world, I maintain we might just as easy have two Sundays when the world is going round us, which every scientist knows it is doing.
That's a lot of piffle.
Oh, aye. Well, can you tell me what day it is now in Japan?
It's Monday.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Bloggs, just as a matter of academic accuracy, but in Japan, now it is Tuesday.
Tuesday?
There, thou seest. There don't seem to me no sense in this day stuff. If it's Monday, as thou sayest down at Greenwich, and if it's Tuesday, as the schoolmaster says in Japan, then I says it's just as liable to be Sunday up here.
Fiddlestick! If this is Sunday, then what's tomorrow? Is it Monday or Tuesday? Or do we lose a day?
Yeah, happen I'll be the man to clear that up.
Hold on a minute. Now, let Capper speak.
What does he think? Us doesn't skip no day at all. The thing is that the days of the week have got tired of turning, so now they stood still and won't go no further, they won't.
They're ridiculous. If that was so, we'd get no further. And tomorrow'd be Sunday too, wouldn't it?
Eh, hey, bar gum, lad, thou's it nail on Ted. Tomorrow's off to be Sunday.
God bless Sunday, never come Monday. Never come Monday.
For me, sir?
Yes. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Jenkins, our newspaper has never broken faith with its readers.
No, sir.
Don't interrupt. I sent for you because, for a reporter, you seem to have some intelligence. Now, about this day business. It's gone too far. It's spread to Wales and to Ireland. Everywhere, from Land's End to John of Groats. Every day is Sunday. Now, we must find out what has happened to those lost weekdays. It seems it all began in Yorkshire. I want you to go there and sift this thing out.
Come in, lads. Come in.
Aye, Capper.
How are you, Capper?
Mary! Put the kettle on for tea. Yon Cowper and Rowley Ellicker come to see us.
Hey,
Mary, if we get some tea, happen Ian could take a bite.
Aye, Ian's not only the strongest man in Yorkshire, but he's got the biggest appetite.
Aye, and with rest I'm having, I'm getting stronger than ever.
Hey, Capper, why, only today over at Wuxley Green, he took a 2-inch iron bar and bent it with his bare hand. Oh, they should have seen the Wuxley men go.
Aye, that's champion. What were you doing in Wuxley Green?
Jan and me walked over to have a pint of ale at pub.
Eh, that's the only trouble about every day being Sunday. I can't get a drink in the own village. The law says I must be a traveller to get a drink of a Sunday.
But that's that trouble. 3 mile walk does man good, and then there's drink at Endor.
Hey, Capper, they should see the people on road. Men and women and children coming from Wuxley Green to Allaby Brig and going from Allaby Brig to Wuxley Green.
People at all villages for miles round are getting to know one another.
And all the folk laughing and talking and enjoying themselves. Oh, it do you good to look at them.
Yeah, I know. I stole at the village myself, and it give me a right warm feeling to see the women sitting in the sun and the men fixing their gardens and the children romping and playing.
Aye, there ain't a sick body at village.
Nay, because folk are out in fresh air. They ain't cooped up in mills.
Aye, and it's all due to you, Capper.
Why, lad, Allaby Brig and all Yorkshire is proud of you.
It's nothing, lad.
Well, weren't I the first man in the land to notice that days of the week were stuck and every day was turning up Sunday?
Well, all I can say is I'm right glad it is so.
Hey, someone's at door, Capper.
Come in.
Does Mr. Capper Wambly live here?
He do.
Which of you gentlemen is Mr. Wambly?
I am.
Well,
My name is Jenkins. I represent the London newspaper, the Daily Clarion.
Oh, aye. Sit down, sir. This is Rowley Ellicker, and this is Jan Cowper, strongest man in Yorkshire. Aye.
How do you do, gentlemen?
And what can I do for you, sir?
Well, I understand that you are the man who discovered that the days had stopped turning.
That's right.
Aye. He did. Well, Mr. Wambly, how did you find this out?
I don't know. But I know that every day is Sunday.
That's right.
Aye.
Well, how did you arrive at this conclusion?
I don't rightly know, but it is.
Aye. Well, haven't you some explanation?
No, I haven't. But I know the days are stuck.
But surely... Why, this is ridiculous. I never heard of such a thing.
Stop!
Mr. Godfrey, I missed the newspaper, boss.
Huh? Why, yes, but what do you want with a penny?
Yes, mate.
Why, of course. Here you are.
No. There.
Why, that's wonderful. You bent that penny with the fingers of one hand.
I did. Now, lad, haven't I better telephone paper and tell him that this is Sunday?
Why, yes, of course, indeed, I will. Well, good day, gentlemen.
You fixed them champion, Jan.
Aye, as if we don't know it's Sunday.
The Prime Minister must do something about this. This situation is unbearable. My employees keep insisting that every day is Sunday.
My men are the same. My firm has a rush order for munitions and gas bombs. But we're at a standstill. The government must act.
I'm afraid we've lost all our contracts for aeroplanes.
Well, I'm a manufacturer of badminton rackets. I don't know how I shall ever make my summer delivery.
Well, we're all in the same... Oh, here's the Prime Minister's secretary.
Gentlemen, the Prime Minister will see you now. Please step this way.
Thank you.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Well, gentlemen?
This is quite an abhorrent state of affairs.
Oh, quite.
Sir, I yield my reverence for religion to no man. To no man, sir. In fact, I am thoroughly approve of religion. One day a week.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Prime Minister, think of our stockholders. Many are orphans. Many are widows. If our factories don't make money, these poor people will be destitute. Because, always having drawn dividends, they've never had to learn how to work. We can't let them suffer.
Gentlemen, you may rest assured that His Majesty's government will do all within its power to safeguard that industry and commerce that is the backbone of our nation. Indeed, of our empire.
Yeah.
Good day, gentlemen.
This way, gentlemen.
Good day, sir. Thank you, sir. Carrington Smith.
Yes, sir?
It's Sunday today, and it'll be Sunday tomorrow. Pack my things. They're going away for the weekend.
But, sir, what about the international crisis? We have two ultimatums which must be answered immediately.
Dear me, that's a nuisance. But all the world knows you can't disturb an Englishman on the weekend. And if this is Sunday, as it seems to me it must be, then I won't be able to answer until the weekend is over.
But when will it stop being Sunday, sir?
Well, Carrington Smith, how long will it take our fastest cruiser squadron to get round to that part of the world which is giving us so much trouble?
Oh, about 36 more hours, sir.
Then I think it will stop being Sunday in about 36 more hours.
Beautiful day, isn't it, sir?
Yes, can you say? Nothing like a day in the country to set one up.
Yes, sir. Is that a relief after London?
Mr. Prime Minister.
Yes, Carter?
A wireless message, sir.
I'll give it to Mr. Kennedy Smith.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you.
It's what you expected, sir.
Let me see it. Carrington Smith, what day is it?
Sunday, sir.
Nonsense. I'm tired of this blundering through policy and its shilly-shallying. If this goes on, we shall have a constitutional crisis.
A constitutional crisis,
yes, Cunningham Smith. So you better pack and we'll get back to Downing Street. We must act immediately. I shall issue a statement that His Majesty's government hereby officially declares that today is Friday, and tomorrow shall be officially Saturday. And the days of the weeks must go on officially in their regular and accustomed order.
But isn't this really Sunday, sir? Hasn't a miraculous thing happened that has stopped the days of the week from arriving?
I don't know, my boy, but I do know this. Even if it is Sunday, and we all, everywhere, decide to call it Monday or Tuesday, then it becomes Monday or Tuesday because we all believe it is Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, yes, I see, sir. Yes, sir. Very good.
Yesterday was Sunday, so today must be Monday unless us have started slipping and now we're off to have the days backwards.
I think thou's right, Kappa.
Hey, I think it's still Sunday.
Look here, I've had enough of this. Stop and come to work. The Prime Minister issued a proclamation that today is officially Saturday.
Well, here comes Sam Small. Let's hear what he has to say about it.
Hi, say, lad.
What's up, Sam? We don't know whether to go to work or not. Some say it's Saturday, and some say it's Monday. And then again, some say it's still Sunday. What hast thou to say?
Well, there's no but one thing to do, lad, and I'm chapped to do it. Mr. Bloggs, can I use thy telephone?
Anything you like, if you can settle this thing once for all.
I'll soon settle it. Connect me with His Majesty the King.
Cool, he is a word.
Is this His
Are
Majesty...
You there?
Is this His Majesty the King?
Why, Sonny, well, small lad. If it don't do my heart and soul good to hear thy voice again.
Hold on just half a moment, Your Majesty.
I met the King speaking Yorkshire.
Aye, he knows all the dialects. It's things like that that make him such a good king.
Eight little things like passing laws can be left to lads with naught but brains.
Aye.
Yes, Your Majesty. What was that you were saying?
How's that been, Sam, lad?
All right, nicely, thank you, Your Majesty. And thee?
Eh, champion.
Eh, I'm glad to hear that, Your Majesty.
Well, Sam, what can I do for thee, lad?
Well, it's this way, Your Majesty. Could they tell me just what day of the week it is with thee?
Eh, Sam, I don't monkey with things like that. I'll leave all that to my ministers and such. But I've just got official information from them that today is Saturday.
Well, Your Majesty, if Saturday's good enough for thee, then there's no more argument. Thank you very much, Your Majesty.
Not at all, Sam. And by the way, Sam, there's been several little things lately that I would have liked thy opinion on. It's our royal wish that thou doesn't wait so long afore thou calls me up again.
That I will, lad.
Well, so long, Sam.
So long, Your Majesty.
Well, what did he say?
He said that today was Saturday.
Yeah, didn't I tell you? Doesn't that make it Saturday?
Well, the trouble is, it don't feel like Saturday to me.
Oh, blimey, don't tell me you're going to start this all over again. I'll tell you, today is officially Saturday.
Now, wait a minute, lad. Now, I don't work here, so I play no favors. But I can tell you for sure how you'll all know it's Saturday.
How can I tell? Come on.
Why, it's simple. You all know that every Saturday morning, you get paid week's wages. Now, if this is Saturday, Mr. Bloggs will begin paying each man a week's money.
That's what he'll pay.
And on the other hand, if he don't begin paying you week's brass, it can't be Saturday. And the chances are, it'll keep being Sunday for a long time.
It's outrageous.
No, that's fair enough.
All right, Sam has solved it.
Come on, Mr. Bloggs. If it's Saturday, you pay off.
I won't do it. Not a penny will you get from me.
Well, mate, I think it must be still be Sunday, so you better go home.
Aye, if it were Saturday, Mr. Bloggs would pay up.
All right. Wait. I'll pay if only to get you seven Yorkshiremen to go back to work. I can see it's the only way to get the days of the week started properly again.
Yeah, lads.
What is it, copper?
But if it's Saturday today, lads, what day is it tomorrow?
It'll be Sunday.
Hey, now, ain't that champion? If it's Sunday, we'll be able to lie abed late and get a bit of extra sleep for a change.
The Columbia Workshop presentation of Never Come Monday, adapted for radio by Stephen Fox from the short story of the same title by Eric Knight. So Cedric Hardwick was heard as Kappa Wembley, Eleanor Picard, Lady Hardwick as Mary Wembley, Whitford Kane as Sam Small, and Charles Paul arranged and played the music cue. The entire production was under the direction of William N. Robeson. The Columbia Workshop, which has just presented an English play in American radio technique, will next week present an English play in the British radio technique. When Val Gielgud, production director of the British Broadcasting Corporation, will direct Fours into Seven Won't Go, an original radio drama written by himself and Mr. Stephen King Hall. The workshop is keenly interested in American listeners' reaction to these two broadcasts. And again, ask for your comments and criticism. Please address your communication to the Columbia Workshop, care of the Columbia Network, New York City. Columbia Workshop will be heard again next Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time when it presents a radio play in the BBC technique directed by Mr. Val Gielgud. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I'll be back next Tuesday with more. Between now and then, there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com. Alongside everything else, Relic Radio, we've got a Shoutcast stream and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thank you very much to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.